You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day is casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, May 10th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, it's Casual Friday, folks. He gave us a head fake last week saying he was going to be off this week, but no. Cliff Schechter will be with us. Also on the program, to address the Where's Hugo controversy on the Bob's Burger tour, the voice of the Majority Report, he does other things too, apparently, John Benjamin. Also on the program today, Benghazi. We'll finally talk about it. In earnest with Cliff Schechter, but maybe not even in earnest. I just don't have the...
Who are we talking about?
Benghazi.
I like that guy.
Wait a second. Wasn't he the guy who was in those... He was in a Cassavetes film, I think. Am I thinking about the right guy? I can't remember.
Mr. Ghazi?
Also, the fast food strike spreads. Detroit now, the latest city. Elizabeth Warren introduces her first piece of legislation. We briefly mentioned it yesterday. We'll talk more about it today. New York Police Department stop and frisk trial continues. More really disturbing statistics that are coming out of it. We will discuss that later in the program. Want to start off with this little gem. A measure advancing in the North Carolina legislature. And you will note that North Carolina is now all aspects, all branches of its government are now controlled by Republicans. A measure is sailing through the North Carolina legislature, which would require teens to obtain notarized written parental consent in order to get access to a range of healthcare services, including testing and treatment for sexually transmitted diseases, birth control prescriptions, pregnancy care, mental health counseling, substance abuse treatment. It will be the first state to require such explicit parental consent for these types of health services. I'm sure this is going to work out well in North Carolina. This passed the measure in the House, North Carolina State House, despite the fact that doctors and health advocates testified against HB 693. Pointing out that imposing obstacles to health services could ultimately dissuade youth from seeking medical care they need. Really? Really? You're telling me that that teenagers would actually forego these type of tests just because they'd have to tell their parents? That seems so strange and counterintuitive. Studies have shown that when adolescents are required to seek out parental consent to access birth control and sexually transmitted diseases services, teen pregnancies tend to go up. and teens' willingness to seek out STD testing tends to go down. Wow, really?
Surprise, surprise.
And how apropos, I believe Jim Nabors was from North Carolina. In North Carolina specifically, half of all new reported cases of sexually transmitted infections occur among people between the ages of 15 and 24. Teens across the country are disproportionately affected by STDs. So, good luck, North Carolina. What a wonderful little experimental training ground the North Carolina is turning into. What a wonderful petri dish of horrible. I cannot wait until they pass a bill saying that all of these things should be treated with leeches. That should work out nicely.
Mom, can you drive me to the mall and then can we just stop by and get an STD checkup?
Yeah, right after we stop by the notary public to get your signature verified. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back with Cliff Schechter. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone, as it is Casual Friday, as we try and do every Friday, is a man who will now be introduced by his theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
Hello, Cliff.
Samuel, how are you?
I'm a little tired. I am still not getting the sleep that someone of my advancing age and weak constitution needs, but I'm doing what I can. For those of you who are just tuning in for the first time, I have an 8-week-old son, and nice kid, not the brightest necessarily in the world, but also doesn't like to sleep that much, but that's, I guess, to be expected.
They just don't seem to be able to figure out how awesome sleep is.
Yeah, no. He does. He sleeps basically all day. Just he does it in tiny chunks.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, he's not a cat.
No.
I mean, he should be able to figure out what nocturnal habits are of the human being.
Thank you, thank you. This is an argument I've had with him many times, and he just sort of stares at me blankly, and then just starts to kick his feet a little bit as if he has to go to the bathroom, which generally that ends up being the case.
Yeah, I know how that goes. I've been there. Been there, Sammy.
Now,
hang in there, buddy.
Now, Cliff, one of the things that I regret not having the opportunity to do this week is to have sat down at the TV with my young son so that he could hear about the scandal that is 52 times bigger than Watergate and Iran-Contra and probably the savings and loan. And God knows what other scandals wrapped
Katrina,
into one.
Iraq, you know, let's just start going through. I don't know.
I mean, it's.
Go start going through all of them, right?
Benghazi. This is the scandal. I mean, first off, let's just. How scandal free must the Obama administration be if they are still harping on Benghazi? I mean, what? Why Benghazi?
Well, I'm still kind of holding them responsible for Teapot Dome myself.
Not sure.
I wish we could get Lindsey Graham to clear that matter up.
But why is it Benghazi? I mean,
oh, you know, it's look, there's a couple reasons, and I think we're discussing a couple topics today that will kind of all, you know, go into this. But one is because they're crazy people, which is nothing new to anybody because of what Pat Toomey said about how many people voted against the gun bill just because it was Obama on the other side. They hate Obama.
Right.
He's
well, that I
Democratic
understand.
Black Democratic dude who's president, and he has no right to be president. He's a fake president, I think, as the new head of the NRA had to say. And this is the view of him on the far right. So there's always got to be it's sort of guilty till proven innocent. There's always something wrong there. The question is, what is he doing? You know,
right?
It's like, you know, is he out there hanging out with too many white women? I know, but they're asking themselves that at NRA headquarters.
But look, that's the general. Of course, they. I mean, of course, they're going to want this. And frankly, I anticipated a lot more of this years ago. But
right. Well,
you know, when
again, that I'm having fun. I mean, and there's no doubt. A lot of it's just pure Obama hatred.
Right.
But there is a strategy here, as weak and pathetic as it is. And it's that polls right now show Hillary Clinton beating the Republican field, including Rick Perry, in Texas in 2016.
Wow.
Winning in a variety of other states by 10 points, by the way, double digit, which in the end won't happen. But if her huge popularity made Texas something that wasn't a 10-point or 12-point win for them, but was something that had to be fought for and they had to waste money there, boy, would that suck, huh? And so they're doing, you know, Karl Rove is involved now. He put out some ad against Hillary. They're trying to weaken her up because they realize that she's a universally, you know, popular person. Put politics aside. I know you and I disagree with her probably on some things, but let's just analyze this, or put policy aside. Let's analyze this from a political standpoint. Right now, if the economy is good going into 2016, there will never, you know, and her health is good. She's had some health issues, and obviously, you know, will be older, although no older than Reagan when he ran. Although that's probably not a good example considering he wasn't his whole second term,
right?
But when you look at all of that, you know, and times can change and things can change in politics, we all know that. But right now, they don't have anybody who can go toe to toe with her, come close. I mean, she would win 400 electoral votes. She's over 50% in her popularity among Republicans. Now, they certainly need to bring that down. So the best thing you do is you bring up a scandal that also maybe hinders Obama a little bit, but has really the best part of the whole thing is that you try to hurt Hillary. And as we've learned with these guys, if they scream loud enough about something that's stupid, like Solyndra being an example, that makes no sense and isn't really a scandal, they do it often enough in their little echo chamber. It becomes a scandal, even if it isn't to anybody else. And so at least they can get Republicans to stop liking her then.
Right. I see. Okay. That makes sense.
You know, so here's the thing. I think Benghazi is Libyan for Arkansas land deal.
Right. Right.
That is what you're seeing here. And so that's what's going on. And so, you know, the things they've brought up so far outside of their little universe of it's just true because we say it's true and we hate you. I mean, the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff has said they could not have gotten military people there in time to Benghazi to help it. They could have gotten maybe for medical treatment after it occurred, even though I don't think that would have helped much at that point. But they were 650 miles away in Tripoli, and they were expecting an attack there. And they had to make a decision, and that decision was to protect the base there. Now, there may be this diplomat that they've invited who's supposedly the whistleblower who's come to a different conclusion. And granted, this is a man who was in Benghazi, and a lot of people have been killed and hurt, and he's upset about it. And his conclusion may be that they should have sent people anyhow. But in the end, if you're making military decisions, would you trust more the Joint Chiefs of Staff or this guy who's upset about what happened? I'm not belittling his pain. I'm just saying the Republicans are using him to try to make it like he's some whistleblower, like he knows more than the Joint Chiefs of Staff knows on this. He doesn't. And then in the end, there's there wasn't enough security. Well, geez, I'm trying to remember, Sam, can you help me? Who was it that cut the funding for security
overall
mission to cut all any and all funds that don't have anything to do with giving money to defense contractors? I'm trying to think who is it who would have cut that?
Right,
that was right. It was the Republicans in 2010. So in their Congress. So I mean, what to say about this? It's a terrible tragedy. It's one that you'd like to think that there are actual lessons here. Mistakes were certainly made by people. The State Department has been held accountable. Hillary Clinton, unlike the Bush administration, created a no-strings-attached independent report of their performance, which came out and criticized them, as it should have been. There should have been more security there. And they're probably culpable to some degree for that, even though I'd argue the Republicans for, you know, cutting the things, that stuff called money that provides security, are more responsible for it. It's not that, but in the end, we could get to the bottom of this, and she's tried to, but we've got, our opposition party in this country is a group of jokers and cranks. So it's, we're not going to get to the bottom of what happened. And again, I really would like to see them put this kind of an effort ever, because I don't think it's ever going to go away to, for me, to what happened on 9/11, which they haven't.
Right.
Because frankly, all you have to do is read the op-ed written in September of last year by Kurt Eichenwald, who wrote a book on this, about not just the one, the Bin Laden determined to attack in the U.S. memo that George Bush promptly ignored, went off to the ranch to clear brush and talk about stem cells, while Al-Qaeda was planning to kill 3,000 people here.
You've covered your ass, I think is what he said now to the guy who delivered that. All right, you've covered your ass.
But he said what? I'm sorry?
He said, you've covered your ass. That
right,
was
you've covered your ass is what he said to what's-his-name, the head of this tenant. As they say, in addition to that, there were 13 different attacks on embassies during the Bush tenure. In fact, multiple attacks in some locations, Karachi, Jeddah, and others, where it seems they did nothing to up their security, and more Americans were killed. Funny, Republicans never really screamed and yelled about that, never looked into that.
All right,
so
I mean, look,
9/11 gets ignored, why we went into Iraq gets ignored, these other embassy attacks get ignored, but this is a huge scandal.
Yeah, I mean, go. That, you know, the your point about Hillary, that I mean, because look, you know, the Alternet did a top seven conspiracy theories by the Republicans. The UN arms treaty and U.S. sovereignty, that, you know, the misreading of a UN proclamation about basically, you know, the gun armament sales as somehow allowing the blue helmets to come in and take your guns. The idea that there are communists in the White House leadership, I guess also Muslim Brotherhood in the White House leadership, and particularly
Louis Gohmert, he had a lot of evidence on that too.
Right, particularly emanating out of Hillary Clinton's office. Then, you know, there's Glenn Beck's. I mean, I guess to a certain extent, I'm starting to see a pattern, even as I say this on some level. Glenn Beck talking about how the third Saudi, I don't even have the energy.
Was he
to call
also
this.
The 25th attacker on 9/11?
Right.
I feel like he was also the guy at the grassy knoll. He's this guy that just sort of travels through history.
Right. I think
he's present at everything. Everything bad that ever happens.
Am I understanding?
Over Sirhan's left shoulder too.
He's a SAG. He's a SAG actor too. That's the weird part about it. And then the government is stockpiling ammunition. That one is big. And then of course Agenda 21. But the ones that seem to get the most play, and I think your point is well taken, are the ones that they think they're going to be able to use in the future, and that is Clinton. So what we're going to hear is...
And there's one other thing. Let me just jump in quickly, and then, which I think is why this is also so popular, is remember good old John McCain called his friends, as he would call them, my friends, Ted Cruz and Rand Paul wacko birds. I don't know what that means really, but it was meant as an insult. It's kind of like trollop. One of those things that John McCain comes up with and we're all impressed by. But this is something, when it comes to this Benghazi thing, that unites all of them.
Right.
So it pulls the neocons, the Lindsey Graham McCain faction, onto the same page as the sort of more paleocon nutbag, teabagger, Ted Cruz. You know, so it unites them, kind of like communism did. It's fun. So I think I wouldn't discount that as a strong reason.
Well,
why
when it came up prior to the election, my feeling was this is a great way for them to try and attack the president without seeming as racist and as or misogynistic or as all their other attacks. But I guess it's getting more legs now, even though, you know, President Obama sort of slam dunked it on Mitt Romney's head. Because of the Clinton thing. So this is essentially the answer. Benghazi is just another way of saying we need to dig back into Travelgate.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Travelgate. That was awesome.
Yeah.
Remember
those days, buddy?
Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, and I think that's part of the frustration, too, on the right.
What are they saying, though? What I mean, well, I still can't. They're saying, okay, it's not just that mistakes were made by the, according to them, that the military didn't have the balls to go in there with seven guys, not knowing what was actually happening for sure on the ground and put those extra lives at risk. They didn't have the balls to do that. But what are they saying? That Hillary Clinton, what was the agenda here that they are projecting onto Clinton? Like, she really wanted this to happen. I that's the part that's sort of
here's
weird.
The agenda that they've said. What their reasoning is, and I use that term loosely, is that President Obama, because he was running on being strong on terrorism, killing Osama bin Laden, which frankly that group of wimps never could figure out how to do, that he didn't want anybody to know that this was al-Qaeda and terrorism, which, you know, he only said like the next day, which Mitt Romney learned in that debate that it was terrorism. But it's part of that whole thing, which is he wanted to cover it up, because if people knew al-Qaeda had launched a successful attack, then it would undermine his reelection and undermine Hillary's future chances, because they wouldn't be able to then use that picture where they're sitting in the room as the raid happens on bin Laden and say they were successful in stopping al-Qaeda.
Right,
that's the conspiracy theory of why they covered it up. And frankly, when they could have stopped it, actually allowed people to die. I read a piece somewhere, and I can't remember where it was, but in there, that's kind of the whole reason why this thing isn't catching on and is failing. Because to believe what they're saying, you really have to believe that President Obama and Hillary Clinton are truly awful, terrible people.
But doesn't that
believe.
Doesn't that, you know, cut against each other? I mean, if they could have sent in a force to quash those people, wouldn't that have made them doubly as strong? So why would you not? That's the problem with this. It's the most convoluted thing. Now, here's the other question I have for you.
Right. Well, it's
why
bad.
The
they don't
frick
ever make
is anybody
sense.
Paying attention to this? I mean, we've got to round it out, but I waited the whole week just hoping this thing would just go away. But every time, you know, and I haven't been watching much TV as of late, but it seems to have just dominated. The Times send people down there. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Well, it is when you realize everything else going on out there. And you realize that, again, not to go too much back to what I talk about quite often, but these guys en masse just voted to allow terrorists to have easy access to guns anywhere in the United States.
Well, that's what our founding fathers wanted.
I'm sorry?
That's what our founding fathers wanted. And if you have a problem with them, then that's your problem.
That's true. They were genius, and how dare I question? But that's the, I mean, that, you know, what, when these guys literally just bent over backwards to do the bidding of an agency that basically lobbies for domestic terrorists in the NRA, and any terrorist really who wants to get their hands on a gun or something worse, because again, we couldn't trace where those explosives came from in Boston immediately, because there were no tags in them, because right after Oklahoma City, when President Bill Clinton tried to get that legislation passed, the NRA and their friends blocked it. So on one end, they're the weakest people in the world, and they for a special interest group, they'll allow us to get blown up and shot. But suddenly what happened in Benghazi was a tragedy, because I don't know. And again, what you point out, it's convoluted. It makes no sense. But does really, when you think out what they say all the time, does it ever make any sense? It's just, if they yell Benghazi loud enough and they put it on, if it shows up on Breitbart.com, you know, kind of like Friends of Hamas, you know, and it shows up on Fox News day in and day out, they just create the appearance of impropriety so that eventually down the road they can throw Benghazi at Hillary and all of their own people sort of in lockstep fashion, you know, like they're in like a Clockwork Orange with their eyes like clothes pinned open, will just sort of nod their heads and say, yes, Benghazi, she must be terrible. And they won't really know what that means and what happened, but it becomes a buzzword like the other buzzwords they use.
Right, and I guess to a certain extent, this is also, in some respects, about 2014. There was a study that came out. I guess it just came out. It's going to be published, I guess, in June, as part of a book entitled "Change They Can't Believe In: The Tea Party and Reactionary Politics in America." And I guess this professor from the University of Washington, Christopher Parker. And you know, I haven't had a chance to dig into these, but listen to these stats. You know, again, take it as a grain of salt. This is from a press release. So I haven't had to read the book yet, but I'm in no way surprised by this. And it echoes other studies we've seen. In in surveying, I guess, 1,500 adults across the country in January and March through March of 2011. This is what Tea Party supporters said. Is President Obama destroying the country? 76% of Tea Party supporters say yes. This is even like they say 6% of all other conservatives say yes. Now, I don't know what that means really insofar as, you know, I don't know that there's much daylight between that. I would imagine 6% of all other conservatives represents about three people. Do you want President Obama's policies to fail? 76% of Tea Parties, yes. Are President Obama's policy socialist? 75% of Tea Partiers. I mean, it goes on and on. This is who the Republican base is. And if they can bring them Benghazi, this is actually a motivating factor for them to vote in some fashion. I don't know. It just seems.
Well, yeah, because that's what gets them to vote. Basically, I mean, you know, I think you were sent over to me this piece on Tea Party and the revival of paranoia.
Right.
This is something, you know, when I was doing some PhD studies, in history, which, you know, I never wrote my dissertation, so I'm sure my professor out there still hates me.
Excuse us, professor.
I'm clearly a dick. But the thing is, you know, a lot of what I did centered on this fantastic, that I would recommend, and I've done this before in your show, that everybody read if you want to understand the right today. This article that turned into a book by a great historian named Richard Hofstadter called The Paranoid Style in American Politics, and he wrote it in 1964. And he talks about the McCarthyites and the Birchers, and the ways he describes them, their breathless conspiracy theories and their paranoia that Eisenhower was a communist and George Marshall was a communist and all these kinds of stuff. You'll see, you know, if you look back through American history from the Know-Nothings to all the anti-immigration, anti-Catholic movements and things like that, you'll see all this stuff. It's not like this is new, right? This is a common thread. It's existed before, as he pointed out in his book, on the far left before, but mostly it's something that's on the far right. You know, I mean, you can go back as early as like anti-Masonic movements that the Masons were going to take over the country in the 18th century. And this, he writes, I mean, seriously, you could not learn more than by reading this. He even goes into the fact that the neoconservatives, how dangerous they were because they were starting to move over to the right back then because, you know, there's nothing but the zeal of a convert. He covers basically everyone, and then, of course, the evangelical sort of propensity for grabbing conspiracy and superstition. And, I mean, he covers everything that really kind of today makes up what we're talking about. And so the Tea Party is the tip of that spear. They are sort of it's all over the Republican Party. You probably saw it. What was the thing that came out of the poll two weeks ago, whenever, that said that up to 44% of Republicans thought that armed rebellion might be necessary? I mean, you know, here's what we're talking about. So Benghazi is a unifying force. It brings brings the evangelicals together with the neocons, together with other of their crazy groups, unites them all in a hatred for the left, and turns them out of fear and gets them to give money to groups like the NRA and Grover Norquist's group and other groups. And this, you know, this is sort of, you know, and frankly, to listen to Rush Limbaugh and people like that who all gain from this.
What's fascinating is to sort of juxtapose this with what's happening with immigration reform. Now, you know, I haven't spent too much time talking about it as of late because it is literally so fluid day to day. 3 weeks ago, there were stories it's dead, and then the next day it's not dead. And then there's concern about the offering in committee of an amendment that would allow same-sex couples to have the same rights under immigration reform as mixed-sex couples. And, you know, when we're really only talking about 30,000 people and you've already – I mean, it has been so fluid. But what was fascinating is what happened the other day. Heritage comes out with a report on immigration.
The illustrious Heritage Foundation.
Yes.
That has always been above politics and all about think and tanking.
Well, what's interesting here is immigration's been taken over by Jim DeMint, and which signaled that they, you know, and Jim DeMint, of course, was the titular head of the Tea Party caucus in the Senate. And I don't know if this is really any type of shift for Heritage, because Heritage also sort of is the huge funding mechanism for people like Limbaugh and Levin and Hannity, and so they're the tip of the spear of the crazies, as it were. They came out with an anti-immigration report saying that immigration reform would cost the United States, I don't know, a gazillion dollars. And even on the right, this report got slammed. But then the next day, basically everywhere, it is reported that one of the guys who wrote the report, I think his name was Rich Wine.
Yes, Jason Rich Wine, which is such a Republican name, isn't
right.
it?
Rich Wine. And that works in so many different ways. I can't even believe it. The Rich Wine.
He changed his name from Jason Very Rich Brandy.
Right. Or just Very Rich Wham Wham.
Oh, that's true.
It works. That's what I'm saying.
His name used to be, you know, he wasn't as successful in the past. So his name back then was only Jason Moderately Rich Complainer.
Right. Exactly. And it comes out, of course, just because, of course, that this guy is quite renowned for saying on multiple occasions that Hispanics may never reach IQ parity with whites, the prediction that new Hispanic immigrants will have low IQ children and grandchildren is difficult to argue against. And
right.
I mean, on and on and on. He's written on, white nationalist websites.
The genetically low IQ of Latinos is responsible for the persistent fact of Latino poverty.
Yeah, there you go.
It ties into the stuff that was done in the bell curve by our old friend Charles Murray, which basically is the way the right makes the argument that, you know, these freaking people are always going to be poor. They're always just going to commit crimes. Let's cut the welfare state. And my gosh, you don't want to make them citizens.
Right. And this was the same stuff that we heard about the Irish and the Italians.
Yep. Why it ties into the sort of paranoid mind and the sort of anti, you know, Jews.
Jews.
I mean, we've heard this about every group, and all these groups have been called the same thing. Remember, there was a time when Jews and Irish and Italians by white Protestants were called non-white.
Right.
It's always a question of your whiteness. And now this is the most recent group, I would say. Latino immigrants up there with Muslims who, you know, are inferior because they're non-white. So they're either savages who are naturally terrorists by birth, or they're people that aren't smart, and that's basically what we're getting here from this. And, you know, that this is the Heritage. This is Jim DeMint at the Heritage Foundation. Not to say that they haven't always been more of a PR shop than anything else, but a lot of people, not just lefties. I remember Josh Barrow for Bloomberg wrote a really good piece about how this was sort of making it clear that they were just going to become even worse, more of a political organization, and put out even more shoddy scholarship than they've put out in the past, which is really saying something. And just when you think they can't sink any lower,
they
find a way.
And the amazing thing is apparently they've gone so far as to now there's pieces coming out from Politico that they're in full-on damage control, that, like you say, they're essentially a PR firm, and they're actually talking about hiring outside PR firms, which means that they need specialists to come in and deal with this disaster that they have on their hands, because...
Ooh, should I try to market Libertas to them?
Yeah, you know that? Maybe.
There could be big bucks on that for me.
That would be so
sweet.
Wouldn't
it be cool for, like, next week on your show I came on, and I'm like, the Heritage Foundation, it's a wonderful place. There's a certain breeze in the air when you walk in.
Cliff would be coming from Hillsdale College. And ironically,
nicely played.
And of course, this is problematic. What's also interesting is it shows another rift, even in the idea that Heritage is really, when they come out with something like this, they're really, in many respects, going after Rubio. And you've got Ted Cruz now coming out and saying that he would never vote for immigration reform. And so this is, we're really seeing sort of the...
He's only half Cuban and from Canada.
Well, yes, and but be that as it may, the hypocrisy aside,
well, he's what you call wholly born and bred in America.
We are seeing sort of the fault lines of what's going to happen in 2016 in the Republican Party. Meanwhile, Rubio requests from the Social Security Administration an analysis as to what immigration reform would mean in terms of Social Security. And according to the Social Security Administration, they find more than $300 billion in net additional revenues to Social Security and Medicare over the coming decade if the immigration reform works. So it's interesting to see this stuff play out at this point. But I want to talk – we don't have too much more time, but I want to talk a couple other things with you because
– Well, can I throw one quick sidebar in there?
Sure.
I promise I'll be very quick, which is – while they were doing their shoddy and fake research, a very interesting study came out in the United Kingdom, which actually looked at a data set of 15,874 people with real researchers that found lower general intelligence in childhood predicts greater racism in adulthood, and this effect was largely mediated via conservative ideology. A second analysis of the U.S. data set confirmed predictive effect of poor abstract reasoning skills on anti-homosexual prejudice. So there you go.
Oh, yeah, I got something especially for that.
And these guys actually were real. That's perfect for it. And these were actually, unlike the Heritage Foundation, where they've got politicians, you know, pretending to be policy people. These were actually real researchers who did this. And I know we're all shocked that people that are complete morons end up becoming racist and homophobic, and by extension, conservatives and Republicans. I'm shocked by it.
Now let's leave that aspect of it and talk. There's a couple of things that happened this week that I thought were pretty interesting, which have bearing on Democratic politics. One is Joe Biden came out this week, and it was reported by. It was reported a couple of places, but he had another one of those moments, not unlike his time at that cafe during the last election, which was, let's talk about Social Security, I think he said. There is no way we are going to allow anything to change with Social Security. Now, of course, 6 months later, the Obama administration comes up with a budget that says let's cut the chain CPI. And I want to get back to that in a moment, but... this story, apparently at either like a handshaking line or somewhere around where Joe Biden was going around, Elaine Cooper on the executive committee of the Sierra Club, South Carolina chapter, had an exchange with Biden where he basically said, I'm against Keystone, but I'm the minority in the administration. Now, I read that.
Who said that to Biden?
Biden said that to Elaine Cooper.
Oh, wow.
She said.
Look at him off message again.
Well, I don't know. Because he said, this is what he said. Yes, I do support rejecting the Keystone Pipeline, but I'm in the minority. I think he's on message. I think he's on message for 2016. And I think he's basically saying.
I was thinking that too. Off message for them, but on message for him.
Right. He's basically saying Keystone is a fait accompli with this administration. But I want you to know right now, before that decision's even made, I'm going to, in very unofficial way, say I'm against it. But I'm a team player. I mean, so, you know, we're seeing Joe Biden, I think maybe even as early as last summer, starting to set up his campaign as distancing himself from any of the more
controversial aspects.
Yes.
In other words, we could see it play out on Social Security and some other things too, particularly if President Obama keeps having fun nighttime BS sessions with Paul Ryan.
Right. I mean, this
over,
is
over Ayn Rand's, what Ayn Rand liked to do in her spare time. How taxation is really a form of Hitler, you know, things like that.
Well, let's also remember, though, that Joe Biden was also the one who basically undercut a lot of what was happening in terms of the fiscal cliff and went in and made a deal with McConnell, so according to reporting. So it's just interesting to see how people are setting themselves up relative to the Obama administration, because also this week I believe you, I don't know if you know or not, but Ed Markey sent out a mailer basically running against Obama in his senatorial campaign on running against him relative to the chain CPI. And so we're seeing now the beginning of what you and I have been talking about for a long time, where we're going to see Democrats running against the president when it comes to Social Security, because in many respects they have to. And
well, yeah, I mean, look, we've talked about this before. He created this situation. You know, I mean, who the hell is going to? I mean, you've already had which two jokers are they? Sean Duffy, conservative Republican. There was one other one who come out and you know, lambasted this. They would never cut Social Security. I mean, the you know, in the way things have shaken out, sort of the way demographics and coalitions have gone, if you look at the numbers, you know, those over 65 that used to be a kind of core Democratic constituency are becoming more of a Republican constituency. And this is only going to help that along. If you're dumb enough to do this, you're going to lose that group in a pretty big way. And so, as we've seen in the past, the Republicans, not that they're generally smart people, but some of them have been smart enough to just sort of hit back on this and become the protectors of Social Security, which is the smart place to be. And so hopefully more progressives, because it's not to say Democrats, having a whole large group of progressives have signed onto letters and done the same thing. And it's just, and we'll have to hope that more do this, because right now the smart way to do Social Security is to run against the president. Or the other way you could run and win in Massachusetts maybe is if you take a $280,000 tax credit on your historic preservation house that had to be historically preserved anyhow. Did you see that whole thing?
No.
Oh, the Republican, the private equity executive and former Navy SEAL Gabriel Gomez, who's running against Markey, has the classic Romney thing going on right now, which is he's released 6 years of tax returns. He won't release his 2005, which is the year he took this big write-off. He took off a $280,000 tax write-off because they've got a law in Massachusetts you can do that for these historically preserved houses like the ones in the Boston area. If you're not, because you're not allowed to make any changes to them, any improvements, and so you get a tax write-off for it. Turns out there was another law that already applied that said that he couldn't make any changes or improvements. So it seems he took a $280,000 tax write-off. He didn't have the right to take, which I know will shock you. But any Republican private equity executive would think of doing such a thing. And now his answer to when people have now been inquiring and hitting him on releasing his tax returns in that year is, sorry, no. Which, as you know, from the Romney strategy always goes really well. Because usually when you say no, everybody just goes away and forgets about it.
That story is not terribly surprising to me, but is there any chance that this guy's going to win in Massachusetts?
His numbers were closer, and he was sort of, you know, he was reminding me a little too close for comfort in a way of, especially in an off-year election, low turnout of Scott Brown, in that the Navy SEAL thing kind of appeals to people. He was distancing himself from the Republican Party as kind of this, you know, this independent type guy. You know, he's a private equity executive, so he's got money. And I think, you know, I think this will certainly help tarnish that. I don't know if he had any chance, but I didn't think Scott Brown for a while there had any chance either. I think Ed Markey's a better candidate than Martha Coakley. But still, you know, we've seen crazier things happen in off-year elections. So it's good now that this is coming out, because unless you have Romnesia, oh, I've been waiting so long to use that line, Sam.
TM.
Then you will remember that a certain guy by the similar name to that tried this whole thing, and people in Massachusetts as well as the rest of the country just couldn't seem to forget about the fact that when you don't want to release your tax returns, you're probably hiding something. And also, the last thing, Gomez had the best statement of all time. He said, I'm not releasing any more tax returns. I've got nothing to hide. Which is just, in and of itself, such a brilliant statement that I wish I'd crafted it.
I love that. Now, while we're in Massachusetts, let's talk about this bill that Senator Warren has introduced. I think it's arguably a messaging bill that, or some people, I should say, are saying it's simply a messaging bill, but I think the message is a pretty good one. She introduced a bill, a day or two ago, Wednesday, saying that, and I think people are well-versed with student debt in this country. It is the second highest form of debt in this country after after mortgage debt. The number of borrowers and average balance increased 70% since 2004. So this is just growing exponentially. And she basically came out, and I think we've mentioned also people know that come July, the government Stafford loans are set to double in their interest rates from 3.4% to 6.8%. She has suggested that what we should do is simply use the Fed's interest rate provided to the banks as a guide for the next year. So give these students a 0.75% interest rate for 1 year until we can figure out what to do with all this student debt. And I just want to get your sense of, like, you know, she's going out there. She is basically saying, I have no co-sponsors for this bill. It has to be something that students rally around.
Yeah, obviously, I think to try and charge students only what banks are charged is a crime against humanity. That seems offensive. I don't know if it's politics. I don't know whatever. I don't know. I mean, obviously, it's not going to pass. But it's a brilliant maneuver, and it also is something that, frankly, what I like about Elizabeth Warren is she knows how to just sort of put things out there that are straightforward. She knows how to message these things. I mean, that's just common sense, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's easy. Think that's what's really
it's so straightforward. It's kind of like if the Obama people and others have been smart enough to do Medicare for all. Done, right? Easily messaged. No arguments, would there be pre-existing conditions or would there be Medicare for all? And that's kind of, in a way, you should have the same interest rate as banks. It's a one-liner. It's simple.
Right.
Right? It's what we too often fail to do on our side. It's guns don't kill people. I'm glad that she's doing it. I'm glad that, you know, some people argued that, she'll be more useful outside of the Senate and all this other sort of stuff. She's been so useful to have there because of her knowledge base and because of how good she is at breaking these things down into messaging and, frankly, her tenaciousness and her courage. And this is another example of that, because culture matters and what people hear matters. And you know, lone voices, whether it's a Paul Wellstone or Teddy Kennedy or Russ Feingold, actually often end up making a difference.
And let me say, too, the difference here between an Elizabeth Warren and Paul Wellstone, and put aside policy, or an Elizabeth Warren and Al Franken, for that matter, who I think probably, when it comes down to politics, are pretty similarly aligned, is that Elizabeth Warren basically has that seat until she doesn't want to be a senator anymore. And, when you have a solidly blue state and you have what is, for the most part, a solid and safe Senate seat, you want that person to be basically setting markers that are maybe out of the realm of possibility in this environment, but are really important to pulling the debate to the left. I mean, I would like to see, I mean, frankly, her come out and say, free, you know, let's just forget about this loan stuff. Let's just start paying for federally funding state universities so that they can actually offer a free education again to people. Apparently, you know, we're not there yet, but this is really important because it opens up the argument as to what is the purpose of government and who should it serve. I mean, put aside the policy implications of this. The question is, who should it serve?
Right.
Why wouldn't the government cut back on its profits in terms of loaning for people to get a college education as opposed to or in addition to supporting the banks?
Yeah, I mean, isn't this, again, as you said, why wouldn't you? It's common sense. And isn't this, again, if we truly believe that we have any form of representative democracy left, isn't this sort of what you're supposed to do? I mean, do we truly believe that it's people and it's not just interests? It's just common sense, and that's what's so great about it. And I agree with you, too, that you need people in these kinds of blue states. You know, I mean, the irony is that when we're talking about some of these other guys, we talked about Russ Feingold, we talked about Paul Wellstone, Sherrod Brown comes to mind, you mentioned Al Franken. These guys are actually all in purple states.
Right.
And need to be given credit for the fact that they're the ones, frankly, who've been pushing the left flank for the most part. There's some exceptions, Barbara Boxer and others, and that's who you need, and people that are in safe states like that, to be pushing the boundaries of what is acceptable, what fits in the Overton window, because that's what they do. No matter what we do, all right, there are going to be 30 basically white, mostly stupid, somewhat old guys that sit around chewing tobacco and spitting it out on their own cowboy boots who are going to be in the Senate, all right? They're going to come from Idaho and Wyoming and Mississippi and Utah and Alabama. And with few exceptions, there's really just nothing we can do about that. And they're always pushing the boundaries to the right.
Indeed.
Even though they represent far fewer people than people in the blue states. But that's the thing. We need to have people who are pushing those boundaries in the other direction. I call it the direction of sanity.
Yes.
And that's something that Elizabeth Warren is doing from a very safe seat. Very important.
Well, Clifford Schechter, you also sit in a very safe seat in the context of this program. And
I like that my seat is so safe. Although, if you listen to this, can you hear that?
That's the door opening.
No, that's actually my seat creaking because I lean back in it so much. So literally, my seat isn't that safe. I expect it to break backwards.
Well, I can't do anything about your literal seats, but your metaphorical seat on this program is.
Could we do like a majority report fundraiser for me to have a new seat?
Let's not get carried away. We could use a couple more members.
I kid, folks. Give all of your hard-earned money, obviously not what you need to live on and the rest, otherwise, to the majority report itself. I can afford a new seat.
Charge.
We need Sammy Boy on the radio here.
Cliff, as always, a pleasure. I know that you're going to be out of town taking that well-deserved vacation that you've been you're so pining for that you thought was actually starting this week. But
I know, I was so excited. I thought we may be able, if you were to want to tape something early next week. I just won't be able to do it live. Do it live!
We will.
I can't do that.
We will check that out. We will talk about that later in the week. But Cliff, as always, I appreciate your coming on.
As always, I appreciate being here. Give the terrorist bump to your little 8-week-old child.
I always do.
And take care, my friend.
All right. Cliff Schechter, everybody. Cliff Schechter. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will be talking to John Benjamin regarding the Where's Hugo controversy. We'll be right back after this. All right, folks, John Benjamin, never known for being timely. We will try him again. John Benjamin, as you know, voice of the Majority Part, does those other shows. On the Where's Hugo? Hugo, of course, Bob's Burgers. John Benjamin on the Bob's Burgers tour. See if he answers now. give out his number.
Hi, Joel. How you doing? I hope this is going to be better for you, this message. Hope you're having a good day. Say hi to Elaine for me. Okay, bye.
John, it's Sam Cedar from the Majority Report. We are we were calling about this whole Where's Hugo controversy and wanted to get your feedback, but apparently you're dodging our calls. I don't know what you're trying to hide, and I don't know why you're afraid to address this, but we won't stop. I just want you to know that. I'm not sure if there's any more of their so-called Bob's Burgers tour going on in the country. But if you think for a moment that the listeners of the Majority Report, that frankly America is going to let this go, you're wrong. So good day, and you can run, but you cannot hide. That's John Benjamin, folks. I don't know what this is going to do to our movie pick of the week, but this is a good time, maybe, to play. What, you couldn't find anything?
No.
Couldn't even find, like, a clip from Bob's Burgers or something?
Because there's no clips up because they're very hardcore about making sure the full episodes are on Hulu.
Really?
So, like, I can't even find a clip on YouTube or anything.
All right. What about from Archer?
I'm looking.
What about from Home Movies?
It's hard to tell which...
Dr. Katz!
Wow, look how big and empty the parking lot is, huh?
What are you talking about?
What do you say you get behind the wheel?
I'm not
in the
car,
John. What would I do behind the wheel?
Drive.
Is that legal?
My father let me drive when I was...
This was an idea we had just literally during the break.
Was that Bob's Burgers?
That was Bob's Burgers, yes.
All right. All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, it is... fortunately, we also have a song from Jimmy Reefer Cake. For those of you joining us for the first time, we invite listeners to send in music that recaps theoretically the week's news in theoretically 1 minute. On times, we stray from that mandate. But here is a submission from... Longtime listener, Jimmy Reefer Cake. I'll leave it up to you to determine what his primary political issue is. But here is the song from Jimmy Reefer Cake. What is the name of the song?
The News Today.
Oh, actually, wait a second. Got a late-breaking story here. I've been corrected. Ladies and gentlemen, earlier in the program, I claimed that Jim Nabors of
Surprise, Surprise
fame was from Alabama. I mean, excuse me, was from North Carolina. In fact, he was from Alabama. It was Andy Griffith who was from North Carolina. Jim Nabors, of course, got his start, I believe, on the Andy Griffith Show as the cousin to Goober, George Goober Lindsay. Then went on to play a role in Gomer Pyle. I may have that backwards, but I don't think so. So there you have it, folks. I stand corrected. Now, let's get back to our regular programming. Here is this week's offering from Jimmy Reefer Cake.
I'm not sure if I even want to hear the news today, 'cause something even worse happens every single day. I'm not as scared of getting shot or a terror attack as I am of this country.
What? Hello?
Sam?
Oh, well, look who has decided to show up. Look who's decided, folks, and we'll get back to the Jimmy Reefer Cake song in a moment, because look who's decided to show his face, not literally, because it's...
Well, I'm not showing my face, but I am calling, and I've had, you know, I wasn't aware of that this was a such a big deal until I heard all your messages this morning.
Well, I mean, John...
But I'm on Pacific Coast time, so it's a little earlier.
Well, right now it's 10 o'clock Pacific Coast time.
I just got up and received all your calls.
It's 10 o'clock Pacific Coast time, John. I mean, so, you know, you can run, but you can't hide.
I wasn't hiding.
Well,
I was not hiding at all. I personally, whatever scenario you think happened, I think is not even blown out of proportion. I think it's just a beehive of lies.
A beehive of lies. Well, do tell.
Yeah.
Please.
Created by
Queen
you
Bee.
For some, I don't know for what reason. I assume self-promotion.
Well, what is the beehive of lies, John?
Well, why don't you tell me what you're angry about, and then I can respond with the truth and the perspective that it needs.
Well, first off, why don't you answer the question? Where's Hugo? I mean, apparently, there was a lot of people in your audience in Seattle who wanted to know, and as far as I know, you just completely stonewalled the question.
Well, I think this gives credibility to every conspiracy theory out there, then, because from what I gather, you instructed one person to print out many, many mimeographed copies of the Where Is Hugo sign.
I did no such thing, sir.
Other people
I did no such thing,
to
sir.
Hold those signs up. Therefore, you have one supporter that made, but that supporter made it look like you had over 11 supporters.
First off, I did no such thing. I never, never instruct anybody to print out anything.
Well, I don't know why the person
one
in
sign,
the audience.
One sign.
I don't know why that one person would say that, then.
Well, I mean, you tell me. Why would random people hold up a sign at a unless they wanted the answer, the question answered?
I mean, you are now really becoming like the Karl Rove of animation.
What does that mean?
You know, you spread these, like, you create these untruths and make them look real, and it's all just a smokescreen. Then no one knows what's real anymore.
What is untrue about a question?
Like the guy from the guy who was the porn star who pretended to be in a news agency.
Jeff Gannon. Yeah?
You're like the Jeff Gannon of animation.
I'm the Jeff Gannon of animation?
And I think you've done gay pornography. I think that, is that true?
Not animated.
I never said animated gay pornography. I don't even know if that exists.
Well, I couldn't even be the, I'm sure it does. If I'm the Jeff Gannon of animation, then that would follow. My understanding is that one of the signs said, "Donde está Hugo?" The rest were in English. So why don't you explain how one person would know two different languages, John?
Well, it did strike me as odd because I was in Seattle, and I don't think there's any Spanish-speaking people here.
Really? That is one of the most grotesque statements
American Indian.
I could imagine anyone
to
say.
But I don't know the area that well.
No, apparently not.
Yeah. But I think it was also just another way by which you try and create this fake false reality. Try to make it more real by adding another language. I think that's probably what it was.
So you're suggesting that somehow I have the tentacles to reach all the way to Seattle?
Well, there is the internet now.
Right.
So I think you sent out a message on the internet to somebody. And
activated a sleeper cell of Hugo supporters in Seattle. That's what you say.
I think it was in bad taste, and that's what I thought right away when I saw it. I smelled a rat instantly from the stage because we were in the middle of a show trying to do a show, so it was distracting.
So basically, you
were able to infiltrate somebody else's show and kind of ruin it for about, I don't know, like a good split second, really, not that long.
Did people do this in a coordinated effort? I mean, I...
It put a bad taste in the mouth of the people who work on Bob's Burgers, the people who work in professional comedy, and for the people who work on the show.
Really?
So I think it backfires.
Really? Well, do tell. I would like to know whose taste, whose bad mouth taste
I know
was.
The creator of Bob's Burgers was irate about what you did.
You're suggesting that Lauren Bouchard was irate about it?
I think so, yeah.
All right, so what's he going to do? Give Hugo less airtime? How does that happen? Does he go back and re-edit the shows?
I think you have to look to yourself about and ask the question in the mirror, where is Hugo? Not do it the way you're doing it.
Well, John, I got news
and
for you.
I think it's time for your production team and all those people there to maybe, I don't know, sit you down and intervene.
Oh, really? Well, I'm not quite convinced that they weren't more responsible for it, frankly.
Beyond the pale, and you've crossed a boundary you shouldn't have crossed.
Maybe I should intervene with them, John.
I don't know, buddy. If you want this battle, I'm happy to take it on, and I'm happy to rally my forces against any possibility of Hugo ever being a part of anything ever again.
What forces do you have? Well, who are your anti-Hugo forces that you claim to have?
I do have to say, I was, like, at first I was really confused that people were holding up. Where is Hugo, son?
No more confused than I. I mentioned it once to one person. I had no idea.
You wrote one guy. I know you did. I know that's how you operate.
What's that? I didn't write to anybody. I wasn't sending mass emails to everybody in Seattle. If you happen to be a Hugo fan and happen to be going to this thing.
There are no Hugo fans.
Well, then how did they all know? Let me ask you this, John. How did they all know to tweet me?
It is my understanding that there are no Hugo fans. I think you...
You answer that question. If it was just one person, how come I got tweets from 30 people?
I checked afterwards with the seating chart to see if those first 11 people in the first row were connected to each other. They were not.
All right, so... That bolsters my case.
They didn't come together. They didn't know each other.
That bolsters my case.
So how is it possible that one row all brought separately the same exact sign?
Hugo fan sites.
On 8x10.
Hugo fan sites.
Notebook paper.
Hugo fan sites. Maybe somebody put a PDF up there and everybody printed it out.
There's a Hugo fan site.
What?
There is?
What's that?
There's a Hugo fan site.
If you say so.
There's one out there. Because you would tell me about it.
It's, I don't, I don't know. I don't know what it is.
All right, but I'll look it up.
I bet you there is. I have no doubt. Right now, I have no doubt that there is, or somebody working on, a Hugo fan site.
Okay, well, if there is a Hugo fan site, I'll expect to see more signs tonight when we do our show in Portland.
Oh, you're in Portland?
Which, you know, we're in the area, and I assume people would drive... I don't know how many number of miles, 500 to 1,000 miles to support Hugo again.
You're in Portland. You're in Portland tonight.
That's right.
And you're doing a show, and you are now asking for people to bring Where's Hugo signs. Well,
I am not asking.
I think that can be arranged.
No, I am not asking that.
I think that can be arranged.
If
John.
We're to perpetuate this mythology,
good day,
like
sir.
Hugo,
enjoy your show tonight. In the event that you can hold it. From the sea of Hugo, Where's Hugo signs?
Yeah, I'm not in any way advocating people to bring anything involving Hugo. But
oh, really?
If I do see
didn't
it,
you
maybe
just
let,
you just threw down the gauntlet?
Like an iota more.
All right. Well, we'll see, John.
Yeah.
All right.
Bring it on.
You know, you bring it on. If somebody brings a sign there, you bring it on.
Yeah, you know I will.
All right. Good. Good day, John.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, folks. There it is. Let's get that out. Let's tweet that out.
Now, if you're a listener of the show and you live in Portland and are attending the Bob's Burgers event tonight.
Absolutely. Of course. John Benjamin's going to lay down that gauntlet. He will feel the full force of our force. And... Look, I wouldn't even print out 8x11 signs. I would do legal size, 8x14. Where's Hugo things? All right, let's play the Jimmy Reefer Cake song. I guess it's going to be a Freebie Friday.
I'm not sure if I even want to hear the news today, 'cause something even worse happens every single day. I'm not as scared of getting shot or a terror attack as I am of this country and how we might react, how we might react. Hey, the Sandy Hook massacre was horrifying, yet weapon sales kept on climbing. A bomb at the Boston Marathon, totally insane stuff going on. A plant blows up half a Texas town. I swear all this news is just bringing me down. It's just bringing me down every single day. Not sure if I even want to hear the news today, 'cause something even worse happens every single day.
Wow.
That was very uncharacteristic of Jimmy. A very serious number there.
That was very serious. It was a pretty song and sad. And weird juxtaposition between that and our little conversation with Benjamin. So,
and we interrupted that song too.
I know. Apologies.
Well, I played it from the beginning, though, so I don't think there was any disrespect.
Right. Well, that was a beautiful song, Jimmy, and hang in there, buddy. Yeah, there's. I do my best when the news of horrible things like that to come up in many respects to not engage, and that's why we don't tend to cover those things on this program. Basically, just because if you want that stuff, you can find it. But I tend to talk about stuff that it, for the most part, implicates our society in a different way. I don't know. Well, that's just my opinion. I don't know what can be gained from following murder trials in many respects. In terms of what it tells us about our society that we don't already know. That is, there are some just disturbed people out there who sometimes do horrible things. And which is not to say that Jimmy's songs aren't always serious. They're serious, but sometimes they're more lighthearted in their delivery.
Yes, like he either adds, you know, upbeat music or, you know, funny lyrics. This one was straight up.
Straight up, yes.
Jimmy straight talking.
Total straight talk. All right, well, let's, we're going to do a Freebie Friday today. And you want to call into the program, 646-257-3920. I'm firing up the phones as we speak. 646-257-3920. Let's go to the IM. Ooh, Umar. Cliff's theme song, love it. The first show after the Boston bombing, you chose not to play it. I understand the decision, but still missed it. There does appear to be some rationality to the notion that a president might have the impulse to try and cover up a coordinated Al-Qaeda attack, being responsible for an event in which American lives are lost due to the perception that enough people, come time of election, would vote against him if Al-Qaeda wasn't held accountable by then. I don't believe that's what actually happened, but it doesn't appear to be a rational theory to pursue by enemies of the president, just as a response, why Benghazi question. But they ultimately, within well before the election, they had made it clear it would sort it out. You're really just talking about like a 2-week timeline. Umar, I actually do believe that TWA-800-96 was actually a terrorist attack and not a 747 design flaw. It was covered up to protect the elections for Clinton if those responsible weren't brought to justice by elections. Though if only the response the American people accept is the nightmare of all-out war, I'm glad such a nightmare was at least postponed. The book First Strike gives, I believe, a good summary of the details of the case. On a related note, Carey, in an interview with Larry King before his 2004 nomination, casually listed TWA as an example of past terror attacks the U.S. had experienced. Of course, the clueless Kling did not challenge him with, didn't the CIA determine that it was a design flaw? Still a weird moment. Interesting.
Oh, we didn't get a movie pick today, so I'm going to give one. Everyone should watch the Dread movie.
What is the Dread movie?
Okay, it's called Dread. There's a comic book character called Judge Dread. A movie came out in 1995 called Judge Dread with Sylvester Stallone. It was horrible.
Horrible.
It ruined the franchise. It ruined the franchise. It was done. And then it was rebooted last year, Dread 3D or something. I didn't go see it because I thought it was going to be just as shitty, if not shittier. And I didn't see it. It bombed in the movie theaters, apparently. It didn't even make back the money it cost to make. But everyone was talking about how great it was. It got great reviews and everything. And then the DVD came out.
Action flick.
It's an action movie, yes. The DVD came out. The Blu-ray came out. It did like it was like the top DVD release of that for that week or more. And so I finally saw it. And holy crap, it's too bad this movie didn't do better because they wanted to make a franchise. They wanted to reboot the whole franchise because it was incredible. It gave you like the old like style, like, you know, the good 80s action flicks. I got a very like Total Recall-esque feel from it in terms of like the action stuff, not storyline wise, obviously. But it's just really good movie. Kevin Urban, I think his name is the guy who plays Dredd. There's like no big actors in it. The female judge character. Well, first of all, let me give you a quick.
I'm sold.
You're sold. Cool.
I don't need to hear any more. Dread. We'll talk about it after I see it.
Sounds good.
All right. We only got a couple minutes left here.
Realize the time.
All right. It's all right. Crystal Count. You can remind John that Lauren Bouchard, said on Marin, Cedar was great on Bob's Burgers. Thank you. Now I'm actually doing Hugo, I think. I'm getting into my Hugo.
Can we get a little bit of Hugo right now?
Well, when I speak to Benjamin and he enrages me, I get into Hugo. Hello, Bob.
There we go.
Hello,
you weren't quite
Bob.
There when you were talking to Benjamin, but there you go.
Yeah. Jeb Butrist. Jimmy's songs are always serious. The man is a modern-day bard. Well, there you go. Excellent segment with Benjamin, says Bartleby 141. LMFAO. I don't know what that means. He seemed genuinely perturbed.
Oh, that's...
I'm joking. Of course I know.
Okay, just making sure.
Come on.
I don't know.
Matt.
Stop.
I know what that means. Let's go to the phones. You're calling from a 404 area code. Who's this? Hello? Let's try one more time. I got a call back in. I don't know what happened. Bear with us. Bear with us.
The call is now first in line.
Why, thank you.
And will be answered by the next available representative. Thank you for your patience.
I appreciate that. That's very nice. That is, of course, Joan, who works downstairs here in the... I'm joking. All right, let's go to 404. Who's this?
This is Don from Atlanta. What's up, Sam?
Hey, Don. How you doing?
How you doing, brother? I just wanted to say I've been listening to your show for a long time, and I've come up with a little bit of a theory to the reason why Democrats do so poorly. It's because basically we're fundamentally like nice people, a.k.a. when it comes to politics, kind of weaklings. I think that every Democrat should, every time they go on air, should start this conversation like this. I'm glad to be with you. I'm Senator X from State X. By the way, Republicans are racist. So what was your question again? Because they've basically labeled Democrats as weaklings or soft on this, soft on that, tax and spend. It's time for us, if we're going to turn any type of tide, to push back and start labeling them something negative as well and to stay on it and to keep pushing, keep pushing, keep pushing. Because the prime example is, one of the prime examples, is this Benghazi thing. It's completely... a made-up situation. You and Chris went over it beautifully. But it sticks because they have the guts to stick with it. And I think if we had the guts to stick with our narrative and to push back, eventually, you know, of course, in the beginning, the David Greger types, or in the guy on MSNBC, the loud voice dude, Chris Matthews, would push back. But it's only a testament to how strong we are. If we can stand our ground, keep pushing forward, it will eventually get traction, just like Occupy Wall Street, how everybody wanted to blow it off initially, but those people would not leave. They stood their ground, and eventually they had to be taken serious. And they were actually able to take the president from an austerity conversation, the president from an austerity conversation to a jobs, at least a conversation. He didn't do anything about it, but we were able to change the tone. What do you think about that, Sam?
Well, I mean, look, you know, the problem is not just with the politicians. I mean, let me give you a better example. Senator Warren's bill, okay, is
yes.
That she's introduced is an incredible messaging bill, in my estimation. I don't know if it's going to get passed or not, but it definitely opens up the conversation. We are, you know, 2 months away from the doubling of these Stafford loans. The student loan crisis is a crisis in terms of what it's doing to the economy, because you've got these people who are carrying around huge loads of debt, what it's doing to our education system, what it's doing to the choices that students have going in. I would like to see us, you know, as we talked about on this program the other day, offer free university. But nevertheless, but there are, in the so-called center-left policy circles, people who are just outraged that she is using this messaging, because it diminishes the it demonizes the Fed in some respect for providing liquidity to the banks when they may have needed it, that this is too populist, that this isn't a serious proposal. And it is stunning to me. It never ceases to amaze me. It's something I've talked about quite a bit for years, on my show, which is that on the right, the compensation for someone, whether you are like me in the sort of political ecosystem, or whether you are somebody who graduates with a master's degree in public policy, the compensation on the right in terms of dollars is multiple times that of on the left. And on the left, for those people who graduate from, with a master's or a PhD, their compensation comes in the form of they're coming more out of academia. They don't get the financial rewards. So they want the academic, the peer support and the peer, praising. And so you can never, so they are inhibited in some ways. And this is why, in fact, you see so many liberal hawks who supported the Iraq war, because there is, within academia, and anyone who has spent any time in academia knows that there is no greater political, small p, political world than academia. And if you step outside of the bounds in certain areas, in certain schools of thought, and we see this, I mean, this is why, you know, we see Reinhard Rogoff could only be challenged by people who are actually coming way outside of the typical economic academia world. You know, you got some guys who are radical economists from UMass, as opposed to coming from the Harvard set, right? It's much harder for them to sort of get out of that narrow field. And so and on top of that, they also, because they're only policy oriented, the politics of something just sort of totally escapes them in some way. And I'm not quite sure why, but, you know, you will never get a fix on student loans unless you have someone like Elizabeth Warren putting this in populist terms. It just won't happen. And go ahead.
So my advice to Elizabeth Warren is this, is to become the left's version of Ron Paul that actually makes sense. And what I mean by that is for her to somehow, I don't know exactly how she would do it, but to plug into the dormant body of Occupy Wall Street, not to per se become its leader, but to peel off some type of support so she can actually stand on her own, because it's easy to alienate and ignore one senator or one person, because you can look at my man with the crazy hair from Vermont, the independent, I forget his
Bernie
name right
Sanders.
Now. Because you only see him on certain shows, Sanders. You only Senator Sanders. You only see him on certain shows every blue moon. But you can always get a John McCain, because basically I hear what you're saying. When you bottom line it, it's all about the money. But if you had a Senator Warren that was plugged into the bodies or the populace or the support of or the
but
workers
that,
of
that's
Occupy
what she's
Wall
doing.
Street,
she's
I
come
think
out.
She would become more of a
that's
threat.
That's what she's doing. She explicitly said in an interview with David Dayan that ran. I don't know where he did it. I think it was at Salon yesterday. She explicitly said to him, and she said in other venues, look, this is a standalone bill. The only way this is going to get anywhere is if students, if this is a grassroots push. So she's put it out there. She has put the challenge out to everybody with a student loan out there. And we're talking millions of people and people who are really feeling the pinch. Contact your senators, contact your congressmen, write to your letters of editor, comment on pages online. Go out and do protests. She's doing what she can do. So really, in many respects, at this point, it's up to those people and to us to support what she's doing. And if she gets support, believe me, she'll do it again. That's the way it works. If she doesn't get any support and she puts herself out there, then we're just letting her, that's the classic, you just leave me hanging. But I got to jump, Don.
Elizabeth Warren.
Appreciate
it. No problem. Elizabeth Warren, 2016. And Sam, your show is awesome as always, bro. Have a good weekend.
Thanks, Don. Appreciate it.
Take it, bro.
Don's also one of my favorite callers.
He really is one of the best.
I didn't want to say that to him while he was on the phone.
Oh, but it's the truth.
I don't want to embarrass him.
When I hear his voice, go, oh, it's Don from Atlanta, I always go,
bingo.
This is going to be good.
Bingo. Bartleby, I wonder if you commented on the GOP bill to undermine overtime pay. Have to admire their audacity. You know what? I saw that a couple days ago. I didn't. This is my complaint with the Dems. Where is the equivalent audacious proposed legislation on our side? Maybe it's health insurance exchanges? Boring. Yes, I mean, the problem is, look at the numbers. There's not an appetite like there is for those type of things on their side. It's just not. So we can keep waiting for that. You know, here, Elizabeth Warren has put it out there. You want to see more of that? Support it. When Alan Grayson puts stuff like that, support it. When you see that stuff, support it. There's no scenario in the world where Elizabeth Warren gets a huge outpouring of support on a bill like this from grassroots people and then doesn't continue to pursue that strategy. There's no scenario in the world. Bassine 985, possible pilot plot twist for Bob's Burgers. Hugo quits to join the Libertarian Party. A new health inspector, Charlie, voiced by Chris Hayes, makes friends with Bob. I'm going to pretend like I didn't even read that.
Yeah, doesn't that give Hugo even less airtime?
Yeah.
Why would you want...
Where are you coming from? Basine, if that's really your name. Jay Tingle, no paywall today, but that doesn't restrain Matt from saying shitty twice. Well... Matt did say it in the better half of the program, and it's only the first hour that gets played on radio. So he was
as
sensitive.
You all know, I have a potty mouth.
And the final IM of the day, ladies and gentlemen, of the week.
Because don't forget I'm Baba Booey.
Well,
so I'm a terrible person.
Let me just go quickly to Umar before I do. Dredd was inspired by a Filipino movie called Raid the Redemption, basically a big shootout in a building. Interesting. Triangle Bill. I wanted to call, but thank you for calling out the complete insanity that is our current legislator, North Carolina General Assembly. They are whacked. Just this past week, there was a medical teen limit bill access that you opened with. The same week, we get a bill to open up all greenways, parks, public spaces, bars, and restaurants to guns. concealed carry. Same week we get a bill to push protections for more prayer in public schools, the exact nonsense that was on the video you talked about on the show yesterday's show. Wow. Man. I don't know where you go if you leave North Carolina. The weather's pretty nice there. All right, folks. See you on Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light's shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in, and my pilot light's shining bright. Shifted in and out of gear.